Hello friends, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, whenever it is for you, and welcome to the Bible Project Daily Podcast. And this project is to work through the entire Bible, chapter by chapter, verse by verse, transforming lives by bringing people within the orbit of the study of the Bible every day. Whether you're here for the first time, or here for nearly 500 episodes, you are most very welcome to join along at whatever pace you want. A new episode is uploaded every day, Monday to Friday, and you can click on your subscribe button wherever you're getting your podcast from and follow along every day. Or maybe if you like, you could even consider going right back to the start and journeying with us through the whole Bible at whatever pace is comfortable for you. So we'll continue today and we'll pick up in Matthew chapter 16 verse 24, where we're looking at this very famous passage where Jesus has told his disciples that to follow him they need to take up their cross. Do hang on at the end and I'll update you of various ways in which you can connect with this ministry and have access to even more free teaching resources. Bye bye for now. Okay, friends, here we are. We're picking up at Matthew chapter 16, 24, and I've called today's message, well, named after the very famous scripture itself, take up the cross and follow me. Now, remember the last time when we looked at the first half of this passage that it dealt with Jesus telling his disciples very specifically what was going to happen to him in the future. And having told them that, he at this point now turns to the disciples and he speaks to them. So let's hear what he says. Picking up in verse 24, he says, "Then Jesus said to his disciples, 'If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it.'" So this opening verse tells us that he said that if anyone desires to come after him, in other words, to follow him, to be a disciple, then they need themselves to take up their cross and follow him. Now, you've probably heard me say this before, and I'm not embarrassed to say it again, but there is a difference in the Bible when it talks about describing sonship or being a child of God and being a disciple, being a follower. Sonship means becoming a child of God by faith in Jesus Christ. That's the first step, the most important step. That is the commitment to offer yourself to God to be forgiven because Jesus Christ has died in your place. John chapter 11, 2 tells us this, "But as many as received him, then gave you the power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe in his name." So simply, when you trust Christ, that is the point in which you become a son, a child of God. But friends, that's radically different from becoming a disciple. Many people choose to accept Christ, but don't choose to become disciples, followers of him. Now, this word disciple simply means student or learner. So the issue is now, and Jesus is saying, yet now you are a son, you are a child of God, you have inherited heaven, but do you want to learn from the Father from this point forward in their life? Because if you do, you need to understand that there are not only certain requirements, but there are certain repercussions of that decision. So Jesus is now going to teach and give his disciples some of the requirements and some of the repercussions of choosing to live the life of a disciple. Most people who approach this verse normally say there are a minimum of three requirements, and there are three requirements mentioned, but there then is an overall starting position, which I feel, as some others do, that this is a fourth requirement of being a disciple. Look again at verse 24. It says, "Then Jesus said to his disciple, 'If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me.'" So if anyone desires to come after me, number one, let him deny himself. Number two, let him or her take up his cross. And number three, let them follow me. So you can see the three requirements there very clearly. But that's only the three. But look again, look at the opening phrase. It says if anyone desires So I think that's another prerequisite. In fact, the first prerequisite for becoming a disciple, first and foremost, you must desire to do that. You see, discipleship, Christian discipleship, is never a matter of coercion. It's never something that is forced on people. It's never anything that you are compelled by God to do. You see, God chooses to lead people. He does not force them. Satan is the one who drives people, who compels people, who makes people act compulsively. But God, rather, is seen to lead. It's an act of free will. There's no compulsion, there's no coercion behind it. It's simply a case of you making the decision and saying, I really want to follow and learn from him. So if you have decided to follow him, then this is what you must do next. So let's look at these requirements. The next requirement, the first requirement, as he says, is you must deny yourself. So what does that mean? Well, down through church history, this has had all kind of weird and wonderful interpretations, like beating your body or literally starving yourself to death has at times historically has been an example that people believed was of denying oneself. Others come to this, particularly in this day and age, and say denying yourself, they confuse it with self-denial and they turn it into something like, I just decide I won't eat chocolate during Lent. But there is a huge difference between self-denial and denying yourself. So it's important to know what the difference is. Let me read to you what some others have said about this and what the difference between these two phrases is. William Barclay says, in the first place, the word deny means to refuse, to recognize, or to ignore. Or as many have pointed out, it's something like saying goodbye to yourself. One other commentator I read said, to deny oneself is much more than self-denial. It means to refuse to make one's pleasures the aim of life and not allowing your own will to be the rule in the decision-making of your life. You see, this has to do with substituting your desires with the well-being of others and the will of God. It's not about denying oneself of possessions or even the little pleasures in life. It's about denying oneself at the core, denying oneself as the final arbiter in any decisions that you make in life. In other words, you're going to allow a new boss, God himself, through Jesus, to make the decisions in your life. What Jesus has in mind by saying this is, it's refusing your own drives and impulses and saying yes to those of God himself. It's about removing your desire as the prominent principle in your life. In other words, those who follow Christ in no way indulge themselves. Self-denial is just simply like someone denying a hot fudge sundae as an add-on to a meal, but that's not the same as denying yourself. Denying yourself is much more profound than this. It's saying, I am no longer the authority in my life. I am no longer the one who has the final decisions on anything that I do in my life. I am denying myself as the right to rule my own life. To say this as clearly as I can, yes, the first requirement of discipleship is to desire to follow him, but the second is to deny yourself, and that means always choosing God's will over your will. But there is a third requirement mentioned here. He says that we need to take up our crosses, to take up your cross. Now, this is something that has also been greatly misunderstood and grossly misapplied over the years. People come to this and think that denying themselves and carrying a cross is something like carrying a burden, something that you have to bear, like living with aches and pains. But this is a far cry and way below what Jesus has in mind here. We need to remember at this point when Jesus said this, we need to remember what the purpose of a cross was in the first century. It was an instrument of death. To bear the cross meant at a spiritual level to carry the instrument of your execution. They made the criminals carry their own crosses to the place of execution. So to bear a cross is, yes, it's an expression of emotional suffering. But when we are bearing our cross, we are recognizing that, yes, we're suffering, but we're also acknowledging the expectation that because of the sin in our lives, we need to die to ourselves. But do notice that it doesn't say you have to be crucified on the cross. It just says you have to bear the cross. And that, for me and many others, is a vivid picture of having an awareness of sin and the suffering it causes in your life, in the life of others, and in the heart of God. Don't misunderstand me. Going to heaven is a free gift. All you have to do to receive that, to be a child of God, is trust in Jesus Christ. And that is given, no strings attached. But if you want to become like him, if you want to follow him, if you want to be a disciple, you're going to, at some level, go through what he went through. In other words, this journey that you're on is going to cost you. To take up your cross means to identify with Christ at the most profound level. His rejection, his shame, his suffering. It means we too being prepared to suffer and show willingness to endure persecution in our life for Christ's sake also. The Christian life is meant to be a life of sacrificial service. The Christian may have to abandon personal ambition in order to follow and serve Christ. It may well be that we will discover that the place where we are able to give the greatest service to Christ is somewhere where there will be no earthly reward, and there will be no prestige attached to it either, very likely. There will certainly, in the very least, have to be a requirement for us to sacrifice our time, our leisure, our personal pleasures, in order to serve God through the service of his fellow men and women. To put this very simply and practically, the comfort of living a life of just entertainment will most certainly have to be sacrificed for the duties of perhaps church leadership, or the call of the soup kitchen, or the call to visit and the pastoral care of the elderly, or the lonely, or the disenfranchised. We may also have to sacrifice certain things that we could normally afford in order to give money away to meet the needs we see. The Christian life is a sacrificial life. It's about living for others, and it's about living for the Lord and serving others, and serving like he served us, then that will involve sacrifice, and sacrifice, like for him, will often involve suffering. You know, if you do choose to serve him and follow him, I think that for many of us it means that you will be misunderstood. You might even be called a fanatic and your motives questioned. But if you love people and you want to see them grow, and you spend your time and effort and money sometimes to help them, then you will receive a reward in eternity. But often, the very people that you serve today will not be grateful. They might even let you down, or even worse, betray you. You know, this same little speech by Jesus that we've read here is recorded also in Luke chapter 9. But in that version, Luke adds this one little word, daily. He says you need to take up your cross daily. And this tells me that this is a daily exercise. If you're following the Lord, you're going to have to do this every day. If you're following the Lord, you're going to have to pick up your cross, which means don't be surprised if you have to literally struggle through every day. So the requirements are there that if you choose to become a follower, a disciple of the Lord Jesus Christ, then you must deny yourself as the final authority in your life. And finally, there is one last phrase here in verse 24. He says this is a requirement if you follow him, and that is that you have to believe and trust him as the leader, and you also have to obey him. You see, embedded in this little phrase, follow me, are the spiritual concepts of trusting and obeying. As that great hymn of old says, trust and obey, there is no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. So this tells me that to be a follower of him, we need to diligently follow him, which means trusting and obeying him. A disciple is someone who really wants to be like Christ, right down to the depths of their soul. They really want to be like their Lord. But to do that, they're going to have to put God's will first in their life. It's no longer going to be what I want, it's going to be what he wants. Everyone who desires to be a disciple has to be willing to make daily sacrifices and to trust and obey him. And that's what Jesus is saying here it takes to be a disciple. So bearing all that in mind and the challenges that presents, I have a question for you. Why in the world would you want to do that? I mean, why in the world would you want to give up the right to make the decisions in your own life and to live by the book, as it were, his book, this book, instead of your own desires and will? Why would you willingly sacrifice everything just to serve the Lord and help people? Why ever would anybody want to do that? Well, the next verses perhaps tell us and give us a glimpse and an insight into why we might want to do that. Because it says, "For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses a soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul?" Let me explain something to you again. You've heard me say it before, but I'll say it again. When you see a paragraph or a verse being introduced with the word "for" at the beginning of the sentence in the New Testament, that means the writer is about to explain to you what they have just said in the preceding verses. So it seems to me that in the next verse, Jesus is now explaining to you why you should choose to become a disciple. Now, the verse is quite complex, so bear with me and I'll try and simplify it, demystify it a bit, to make clear what I believe Jesus is saying in verse 25 when he says, "Whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." Actually, this is nothing more than saying that if you let the Lord call the shots in your life, if you make him your Lord, your ruler, that you are servant and he's master, then I think, yes, we've heard you're going to lose out on some things, but what you're going to gain is so much more. Some have said a much better translation of this phrase, "lose your life," is "what will a man give in exchange for his life?" And in many ways, exchange is a better translation. And exchange is an interesting word, and it's used on several occasions in the Old Testament, particularly in the book of Ecclesiastes. We can read, "There is no exchange for a faithful friend," and there is no exchange for a disciplined soul. That's Ecclesiastes 6 and chapter 26. These phrases mean that there's no price by which you can buy a faithful friend, or no price through which you can purchase a disciplined soul. Therefore, I think Jesus is saying in these two final things that once someone has lost their life, in the sense they've handed it over to him, or on the negative side of that coin, once someone has lost their life because of their desire for security and material things, there is no price that they can pay to get it back again. It also means there is nothing that we can give to Christ in place of our own life. It's quite possible for someone, even a Christian, to try and withhold his life from God. It's very common for people to do that, in fact, to make a decision and be accepted and forgiven as a child of God and never to move on from there. And it's very common, for example, for people to think that being part of a church is just something they give lip service to by giving or making sure their weekly offering goes to the local church. But they don't even attend. They don't participate. And in reality, that does not satisfy the New Testament demands of church membership. You see, the only possible gift to the church that we can give to God is us. The only possible gift to Christ is our whole entire life. There is no substitute for it, and nothing less will do. Jesus is saying here, if you lay down your life and you do what God wants you to do, when you get to the end of your life, you will be able to say, "Wow, I've really found out what life was all about, and I did that by living my life God's way." That's why we all need to become disciples, not just children. And we all need to always strive to become better disciples, because by holding on to any part of our life, we find we're missing out on a better replacement by far. And then he says in verse 27, "For the Son of Man will come in the glory of his Father and his angels, and then he will reward each according to his work." So Jesus is saying here, finally, look, if you live for yourself, you're going to regret it. But if you live for the Lord and you do his will, what you will get in the end is an eternal reward. And gaining the whole world and all of its positions and all of its powers and pleasures this side of eternity will not even begin to compare with the reward that you will get in eternity. What Jesus is teaching here is that for you to become a disciple, it means you've got to put God's will above your own. Recognizing all along that this may involve sacrifice, it may involve suffering, but you are still to do that because it means that one day, in the end, you will be able to stand before him and hear him say, "Well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of their Lord." So that's the reason we do this. And we do it in the knowledge that it might mean suffering and hardship now, but it will mean glory later. Many years ago, a matter of fact, at the beginning of the 20th century, there was an ad appeared in a London newspaper, and the ad read, "Men wanted for a hazardous journey. Small wages, bitter cold, months of complete darkness, constant danger, safe return doubtful." Who would ever apply for a job like that? Well, the man who put that on the paper was the famous South Pole explorer, Sir Ernest Shackleton, and he said the response was overwhelming. It was as if every man in Great Britain wanted to go to the South Pole, he wrote. Why would they want to endure such hardship? I would suggest it was because they wanted the glory. And that's what Jesus is teaching here. We might suffer now, we might need to sacrifice today, but we're going to experience the glory later. I think the Apostle Paul captured this all up in one phrase when he said, "It is so that I may know him and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his suffering." So you have a choice. And most people in life will choose comfort and convenience. Most people, all they want out of life is to be comfortable and live a convenient life. They want to get everything all wrapped up in this neat little package, living a life without difficult or hardship. Which means they'll talk a good game when it comes to their Christian faith, but they don't want God to interfere in their lives because they don't really want to do the will of God because of the sacrifice it will involve. As someone rather amusingly put it, the Valentine might say this: "I would climb the highest mountain, I would swim the deepest ocean, I would crawl across the hottest desert, I'll do anything for you, my love, I would bear any trial or plea, and there is no limit to my love. And I'll be over Friday night if it isn't raining." That's what most of us do. In truth, most of the time we talk the talk, but when it gets right down to it, we don't walk the walk. You can either, in this life, you can choose comfort and convenience, or you can choose the life of a disciple of Christ. And that may involve hardship and difficulty and sacrifice. And that's as simple as I know how I can put this. I'll finish by telling you a very quick story. You may have heard it before, but it's worth repeating because I think it vividly illustrates the choice we make on these occasions. There was once a family who had a little boy, and that family owned some rather expensive antiques. And one such item was a very valuable vase, and one day the little boy somehow got his hand down into the vase, and they were horrified when they found him walking around the house with his hand in the vase, and he could not get it out. They tried soap. They soaked his wrist with vegetable oil, hoping that it would seep through, but his hand still wouldn't come out. Finally, they thought, "We have no choice," so they went and got a hammer and said, "We'll have to break the vase." The little boy looked at them at the last minute and said, "Would it help if I let go of the pound coin I found in the bottom of the vase?" Friends, don't hang on to the pound coin today and lose the greater reward later. Sometimes, you know, we choose to live for ourselves and not for God. We are so bent on holding on to what we want that we lose what we need and we miss out on the greater eternal reward. Okay, there we go, people. That's it for today. I do hope you found that helpful. You've joined a community of people, thousands of us around the world in over 160 countries, who've made the decision to make the study of the Bible part of the everyday rhythm of their daily lives. And if you want to come along on this journey with us, then just click on the subscribe button wherever you're getting your podcasts from. You'll also find there an episode notes page with active links to places where you can actually get a free transcript of what I've said, and also links to other places where I put more formal, structured, discipleship type teaching and training courses. Always free, always freely available, always copyright free and in the public domain. I do hope you're finding them helpful. Now, if where you're getting those podcasts from, you're not seeing active links, because I'm aware some of the podcast platforms are now blocking those, then you can visit the podcast where it is hosted on the Bible Project at buzzsprout.com, and all the links will most certainly be active there. And you'll also find a place there where you can support this ministry if you're so inclined or prompted. But having said that, the main thing is that you've made the decision to make the study of the Bible part of your lives from here on in. And thank you for doing that. I hope you're being blessed by it. I know I'm being blessed in the preparation of it. And with that said, I do trust I'll see you right back here tomorrow, or whatever day it is for you that you're choosing, and at whatever pace you're choosing, to join us on the Bible Project Daily Podcast. Bye-bye for now.